Welcome to the Dirt on Data podcast, where we explore how to unlock the data needed to transform agriculture for smallholder farmers around the world. Our co-hosts, Richard Charlatan and Drew Whedon, talk to the people, businesses, researchers, and visionaries leading the ag data revolution. Along with our partners and collaborators, we explore the creative new ideas and innovations that improve food security, build sustainable and inclusive food systems, and catalyze a vibrant agricultural data ecosystem.
Welcome to the Dirt on Data. I'm Richard Charlatan, the Vice President of Operations at Tetra Tech and a Senior Advisor on the Enabling Crop Analytics at Scale initiative. I'm so happy to be co-hosting this podcast along with Drew Whedon, where each month we explore the innovations shaping the future of crop analytics, bringing you the dirt on agricultural data. We're excited to welcome Albert Bogart with Rabobank to our podcast this month to discuss how data can improve access to financial services for smallholder farmers. We're going to learn more about how ground truth data overlaps with financial equity. Albert is the head of smallholder solutions at Rabobank. He has extensive experiences as a banker working with smallholders around the world to address their challenges and sees the enormous potential that can be unlocked by harnessing agricultural data. Welcome, Albert.
Hello, and a pleasure to be here.
Albert, Rabobank is a breakthrough leader in bringing digital agriculture solutions and services to smallholder farmers. I'm so excited to talk with you about how smallholders can better access financial services and how we can work to support financial equity using new digital tools in agriculture. Could you start, Albert, by telling us a little bit about your role in Rabobank and how your work supports smallholder farmers to overcome the challenges that they face?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the head of smallholder solutions in Rabobank, and my role is to oversee and coordinate the different initiatives that Rabobank has for smallholders, but also to align that internally and externally. So internally, we speak of a smallholder ecosystem. And that's a bit of a like interdependent system of solutions from Rabobank, but also external suppliers and clients of the bank and partner banks, where Rabobank contributes to with its own products and services. Examples of that are a carbon sequestration platform, value chain finance solutions, agricultural exchange, partnership with MasterCard, credit analytics, advisory services. But more importantly, it's not just the solutions of Rabobank that make things work. It's especially that ecosystem approach, where we work with partner banks, with food and agri companies, with funders, with international donors, and they all play a role in those smallholder ecosystems. And then going to your next question, how does that help farmers? In the end, it's all about helping farmers to increase income. And that's indirectly happening through improving access to finance and to financial services like payment solutions and savings accounts, but also by improving supply chain efficiency, which just means less costs and more income is left for farmers. That happens especially through farmers' organizations. Rabo Foundation does a lot of work in that. But we also do that by creating whole new solutions or whole new revenue streams for farmers. For instance, by supporting farmers to move to agroforestry systems and then selling the carbon that is sequestered in those agroforestry transitions, selling that in the international carbon market. And that's, by the way, uses remote sensing a lot. So that's very close to the ACARS initiative.
Thanks, Albert. That's a great segue to my next question. As you know, we're really focused on how to accelerate the benefits of advanced analytics in agriculture for smallholders. Could you talk a little bit about how Rabobank and your partners are using remote sensing, data and analytics to improve access to financial services and financial products for smallholders?
Yeah, sure. It all starts with the high cost of lending. Smallholder farmers are small per definition. They live far away. The roads are not always best. Fuel is expensive. So that means costs of lending are high. And that can be risk costs for defaults, but it can also be, and very often is, transaction or operational costs. And it's there that non-traditional data, which could be supply chain data, payment data, phone data, but also scalable external data sources like remote sensing. That type of non-traditional data can play a role in replacing part of the traditional credit process and then reducing the costs of lending. So that's in a nutshell, what is the value of data and new data sources in general? And the lower the cost or the marginal or incremental cost of those data sources, the better it is actually, because that's, then you can really lower the cost of lending. It doesn't make sense to find very expensive and very useful data sources, because it's not going to lower the cost of lending. And then if you look within the non-traditional data, there is a source of scalable data, including geodata. And basically there are then three main use cases for banks. The first is credit scoring by assessing the credit worthiness of farmers. The second one is credit monitoring. That's all about when a loan has been disbursed. It's about following the farmers, and their remote sensing has the potential to see a couple of things from the sky that you previously had to watch yourself, let's say by visiting the farmer. And the third category is about product strategy. So it's about selection of value chain, pricing, structures of financing. That's where remote sensing can also support a lot. And typical, more technical remote sensing features or products are crop suitability, vegetation monitoring, but also soil moisture and yield forecasting. And there's also a lot of new stuff that is being developed, like the ones that ACAS is focusing on, like boundary detection of fields, crop recognition, yield forecasting. And basically that's a huge promise for more scalable information on the farmers themselves, because if you can compare farmers with neighboring farmers, you gain a lot more information on that farmer in terms of its agronomical skills or farmer skills. And actually, to build all those models, you need ground truth data, field boundaries, crop detection. You need a lot of ground truth data for that. But that is the link between geodata, the ACAS initiative, and the access to finance part. And that's also why I'm very much supporting the ACAS initiative.
Thanks, Albert. Just to build on that and go a bit deeper, I mean, I'm really excited about the new tools that we're starting to see in crop analytics using machine learning and ground truth data and remote sensing to give us a level of granular data that we've never had before, especially for the work we do in food security early warning. From a bank's perspective, what does that data look like to you? Is it really usable? Is it too new? Do you get as excited about it as we do?
Yes, actually we do, but we've been experimenting a lot in the last 5 years. So before I joined this role as Smallholder Solutions Head, I was innovation lead at the Rabo Foundation. And there it took us a lot of experimentation to really assess the value of satellite data. And we basically did that in 3 or 4 steps. And the first one was very simple, assess the technical accuracy of data sources. And some were very accurate and are very accurate, and others are less or only under certain circumstances. And then the next question was always, okay, it's an accurate signal, it's consistent, we can use it in scoring models, etc. But how predictive is it? Because, yeah, sometimes it's just not predictive enough, or at least not sufficient compared to the use case you have in mind. Then the third question is all about, okay, it's predictive, very nice, it's accurate, but does it really solve a problem? And that's all about the benefits, which brings us to the fourth one, which is costs, which is all about cost-benefit analysis and balancing the costs of obtaining a satellite signal to the benefits it brings. And there we have to realize that geodata is just one of the many data streams that are relevant for a financial institution to lend to a farmer. And if you just look at a farmer based on common sense, what is the income of the farmer? It's basically production times market price. And production is, of course, well predicted by geodata, but not the market price. And the final income and cash flow and repayment capacity is also determined by the costs of a farmer. And then with smallholder farmers, we often find farm households. So they're a household with multiple, let's say, income streams with multiple expenses. There's often a mix between household income and expenditure and business income and expenditure. So that illustrates how many more sources are needed to really predict the creditworthiness of a farmer. And the smaller they are, the more data streams are actually necessary. So yes, it is useful, and that's why also Rabobank puts a lot of effort in it, but it's very important to put it in perspective and be realistic on what it can do and also what it cannot do.
Thanks, Albert. Those are really, really critical points. Could you tell us what some of the other elements of success are for AgTech and FinTech services for smallholders, especially thinking, you know, about a bank like Rabobank in terms of how you reach scale across multiple geographies and types of client or user?
Yeah, I think what is now necessary is business model innovation. And product bundling is actually a key element of that, because that's another way how you can reduce the cost of reaching a farmer, right? By bundling products or at actually optimizing a visit to a farmer, which is still far away and expensive. Eh? And especially talking about data, it's not easy to get the right data quality. And then it all comes down to efficiency. So you have one visit and you can use that visit and data collection exercise to cover that with multiple revenue streams. That could be finance, it could be farm inputs, it could be offtake, it could be insurance. And that has an additional benefit, not just from the service provider perspective, but many farmers need multiple solutions at the same time. Just finance is often not enough. A market is needed, inputs are needed. So product bundling for the farmer is one of the key elements. Less replicable is the enabling environment. I often use India as an example. Why is India so successful in scaling ag fintech solutions to smallholder farmers? There's a couple of reasons. One is the farmer density, 120 million smallholder farmers and more. And that really allows for scale. Well, that's, of course, difficult to replicate in every geography. More replicable, I would say, is the digital infrastructure that the government has designed. Digital ID, which creates a unique identifier. From a data perspective, it's incredibly important, because then you can start to combine data sets around a single identifier. And in countries where you don't have that central ID, that's a big struggle. But also the UPI, the payment interface between banks and consumers. So that's a part of digital infrastructure that can be replicated easily, or at least technically easily, in other countries. But I would also say government policy, the priority sector lending, incentivizing banks to finance more farmers. So those are a couple of elements that are only partly replicable. But I would say the digital infrastructure, the enabling environment, and the business model innovation on the market side definitely need to happen.
Thanks, Albert. Great answer. It made me think, you know, when we started working on ECAS, we had an assumption that private sector players would not want to share their ground truth data because it gives such an important analytical advantage. But in fact, what we're finding, the more we work with different private sector partners, is that there's a huge appetite to share data, especially across markets, and that where the real value for them is in the quality of the analytics they produce from it. So that's given us quite a lot of hope that we can create efficiency in the smallholder ecosystem with multiple partners collecting those key pieces of data like field boundaries or crop type. So that's I think a really critical point, that efficiency of data collection at the field level, where it's currently really expensive, is important. You talked about what's needed to make things work and scale up. Where do you see some of the biggest gaps in the digital agriculture ecosystem that are preventing us from kind of scaling up the use of these tools to improve access to finance?
Yeah, I mentioned already the challenges with data collection, which remains expensive. And therefore, having multiple revenue streams to cover that exercise is incredibly important. There's a lot of parties like input providers, off-takers, banks, trainers, farmer extension services. They all have pieces of data that are relevant, but just by themselves as an individual data stream, they're just not relevant enough, for instance, for financial institutions to be useful. It's the combination of data that really creates valuable data sets. And there we find a big challenge, actually. And that's because data sharing and aggregating that data, combining that data into a farmer profile is still just not happening. And we've done quite a bit of research and trying to experiment with it ourselves. And we find quite a large list of issues. It starts with data definitions. How do you define an acre, for instance, or how do you define a farmer? There are so many definitions. You should align that. Otherwise, you can't aggregate the data. Not just the definitions. It's also the ways and the collection tools, the protocols of collecting, for instance, a field boundary or defining the acreage of a farm. There's a lot of governance issues related to regulations, for very good reasons, but also related to trust. And we feel that sometimes there seems to be a lack of technical possibilities, basically to have selective data sharing in place, which basically means you share one piece of data for a very specific purpose, which is pre-competitive or is bringing benefits to the farmer and to yourself. But then you want to be sure that it cannot be used for other purposes. I think outside agriculture, we find many examples of these, but within the agricultural sector, and especially linked to specific use cases, like finance or access to markets, there's still a lot of ground to cover. So I think that's actually one of the main bottlenecks to benefit from the huge potential there is in all the data that is available.
Yeah, thanks, Albert. And that last point is something that we've been really focusing on, is trying to figure out what are the models, especially in that pre-competitive space, where we can facilitate the sharing of information between actors who have it. And I think what we found there is there's a lot of interest in doing that in general, but what's missing are the pipes and plumbing to make it easy for people to do that and do it in ways where they can define the terms of use. And so that's definitely an area that we're working on and thinking through. And I also just want to make a quick plug for anybody who's trying to figure out how to collect basic ground truth data. They can go to cropanalytics.net, where we have a standard ODK toolkit for collecting ground truth data on field boundaries and crop type that people can use that follows at least the current established standards on measurement of those things. So if you're out there thinking about how do I collect this data, we're trying to help standardize some tools there that make it easy for you to do that. So just wanted to give a plug to our listeners there. Albert, we talked about a lot already. What are the current innovations or things that you think we're just about able to do that have you most excited to address some of these issues? What's really cool out there?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, so it's difficult to choose. I like the whole new business model for farmers by rewarding them for carbon sequestration. That's one. But also the initiatives that ACAS is focusing on, the combination of field boundaries with crop recognition and yield forecasting or yield indication. That has a huge potential also to solve one of the bottlenecks that I just mentioned, which is all about the cost of collecting data. I really hope that will be successful, because if that can be made available to the wider public to be used to data scientists and remote sensing experts all over the world, I think that will be another great contribution to lowering the transaction cost of lending. So that's a bit of a technical angle. There's one which is more, let's say, linked to the reality of the farmer. And that's the innovations that we see in the last mile providers. I call it last mile as a service, where external service providers help farmers organizations to digitize their operations. They provide the systems for digitizing transactional data, but also connect that with, amongst others, remote sensing data. And it's then that after 5-6 months, a connection is made to banks. And that's when also these parties put skin in the game, like a first loss guarantee for the work they have done. So it's a great way to connect farmers to farmers organizations and the farmers organizations to banks. And that's really something we haven't seen in the previous years. And it also makes life easier for banks, because banks can develop everything by themselves. Some banks do that. Other banks, they partner with agtechs who do all the work, who do all the digitization, but then you lose a lot of control on activities. And this is that nice intermediate solution where you can have the best of both worlds. digitization tools, last mile implementation on one hand, with very specialized parties, and on the other hand, the balance sheet of a bank, the regulatory compliance, everything that banks are good at. So that's another, let's say, new development that we're seeing now, and I'm extremely enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think one of the challenges that we see is there's a lot of particularly seated input providers, extension providers developing digital tools to support farmers. But when you kind of go down to the farm level, you realize that someone needs a smartphone and they have 13 apps, one for each crop that they have to use. And it's all about managing the input as opposed to giving farmers tools to manage their farm and their business. And when we talk to farmers about, you know, what they need, they tell us we want basic record keeping. We want efficient extension advice on when to use inputs and not to use inputs, when our disease risk is high and when it's not, what market prices are, how we can get the best income from our farm, not how they can juggle 15 different apps on their phone. So I think that that's a really important development we're seeing. And mirrors a bit what you see in more developed countries where ag tech providers are providing commercial farmers with solutions to manage their farm that integrate all of these things as opposed to individual solutions for each input or seed or other tool they provide. So that's a really great point. Albert, we're going to wrap up this fantastic podcast. Any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
I think we covered quite a lot of ground in this conversation, and I'm really looking forward to the outcome of the ACAS initiative. I like it very much, and that's for two reasons. To start an initiative like that, it really requires a lot of in-depth knowledge. You need to be quite a specialist on the topic to see the long-term need for this type of solutions. And it's that combination of in-depth knowledge together with the long-term vision and the long-term patience to make this work that I find quite unique. You don't see that very often. So it's great that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is supporting this and addressing this topic.
Yeah, thanks, Al. But I think what was really key when we started the initiative was there was so much excitement about digital agriculture for smallholders. And when the Gates Foundation started talking to all his partners about what they could do to support, almost every single one of them said ground truth data. We need ground truth data. We've got a lot of great satellite remote sensing. We've got a lot of use cases that we think we could really move forward if we had ground truth data. So yeah, ECAS was really set up to address that problem in the long term and try and bring people together. And it's been fantastic over the last few years to kind of see how much enthusiasm and support there is and willingness to work together to create an equitable and impactful digital ecosystem for smallholders. So yeah, thanks very much for your support and your great insights today.
Yes, it's a pleasure. And thanks for having me here.
Thanks, Albert. And thanks to all the listeners out there. We look forward to seeing you next month. And thanks for tuning in to The Dirt on Data.
The Dirt on Data is produced by the staff of Tetra Tech's Enabling Crop Analytics at Scale initiative and supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Our special thanks to our host this week, Richard Charlatan, and to our guest, Albert Bogart. You can follow Rabobank's work on the web at www.rabobank.com. And to receive the latest updates from the ECAS project, follow us on Twitter at ECAS_AgData. Or visit our website at cropanalytics.net.